The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
We did it!
Yeah, all right. There's that noise again. It must be another week that I'm still alive. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 448. Oh, man. It's the week after E3, and here we are. We're alive. We survived somehow. We have an episode that we're going to be putting up somehow where we did it in an Airbnb, and everyone got real drunk, and Steve was there.
Yeah.
Greg, you were there.
You were there.
You weren't there. But anyway, I'm Max Scoville.
I was there and then left.
I'm joined. Yeah, you were like, I'm so tired. I'm going to go to bed.
It was 12. I was told to be over by 12:30. It had just started at like 12:20.
We got related. We saw pictures of you at the JW Marriott, you little rat boy.
Why did you say you were there and you left? That's the way everybody would describe that scenario.
I'm still there to this day.
Apparently they made fun of me.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, good. Well, now we're making fun of you on the show.
Yeah.
I wasn't even there and I'm doing that.
Anyway, I'm Max Scoville. I'm joined once again by Andrew Goldfarb until he decides to leave. Brian Altano
forever.
And Marty Sliva.
Greets.
Yeah.
The Slip, they call him.
Marty was
Marty
told,
the Slip Sliva?
So I really like the shirt. You look
Thanks,
great.
Man.
But Marty got yelled at
Marty
by James Faulkner
Sliva.
That he's not God damn it. That he's not allowed to wear that on camera because the moray will be too bad.
Yeah, it's too it gets
like
very,
an eel.
Yeah. And I punched the
moray.
I punched James Faulkner right in the kidney.
All
right.
Wow.
Okay, it was E3. Right, it was literally last week we played 10,000 games.
Did you guys order
games.
The food?
Yeah, there wasn't.
All right, so hot farts, there's a lot of games to talk about.
There's no news.
No, there's no news. This is going to be sort of a recap of some of the stuff we talked about on the post show after the conference. Some of the stuff you'll hear in the drunk episode.
And some of it is stuff that we saw BCD in the latter days of the show, so that we have a little bit more insight into you than we did like right after the conference.
Yeah. Before we jump into games proper, Brian, you want to talk a little bit about the conference?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty okay to say, and I don't want to be wearing my fanboy garbage on my sleeve or whatever, but Sony won E3. Like, can I say that? Can I just kind of say that?
Yeah.
Like, Microsoft had a good conference. I wrote a joke about how they only showed a slim version of that. Obviously, that's not what they did for a full hour. If you believe that, you have brain damage. They didn't, for 60 minutes, they didn't go, we only have a slim console.
I'd say their offering was pretty slim.
I read a stat that Sony showed the most games at E3, and their conference was the shortest, which should tell you that they did a really good job of pacing and format and focus.
I mean, their conference was breathless.
Yes.
It was literally, it started, we ran from the live show to watch it, and at some point I'm like, man, I really need to pee. I'm going to wait until they talk about sports or numbers or something, and it just never happened.
And they're like, hey,
you're on air again in 5 minutes. I'm like, well, I have to pee.
There's something. There's that app that tells you when a good time to pee during a movie.
Yeah.
And I think if they ran the E3 press conferences through that app, every single one of them would have had 10 or 15 minutes where you could pee the
especially
whole time.
Especially
EA. Oh my God, yeah. Or even Microsoft was just like, here's a bunch of people playing Minecraft. Remember that game? Sony was just like, they didn't even go to weird sort of like long-winded developer interviews. They didn't have a lot of like, they didn't do like celebrity, like, hey, it's Sean White showing off his socks.
They didn't do the thing where they showed like just a graphic of like a PS4 with a number next to it, whether it was a price or a number of sold or whatever.
Yeah, the only, I mean, like, it's nitpicking, right? My only I think the very end of the conference, I thought it was a weird note to end on. I thought the Days Gone demo was a really weird that, like any other conference, that would have been great. But like for that conference with that many big things, that was a weird
demo. I mean, there were so many other
choose.
Things they could have ended on. Exactly. Like they could have ended on Spider-Man or Death Stranding.
I think
or,
they should have ended on Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'm totally with you guys. It's sort of like, it was like, you know, a really good album where the last song's like, what?
So and that's the thing, like that demo.
I can't help but feel like that was a contingency plan. Like there was something else they had lined up that just wasn't ready.
I mean, so all the rumors, the rumors were that there was a Red Dead Redemption 2 reveal that was going to happen, but that it took place in a bar, and they removed it because of the events in Orlando, and then obviously they got Days Gone to replace it, but then Sony straight up said no, this has been content locked for months.
And also like the Days Gone demo was a man mowing down mobs of people with an assault rifle.
Yeah, freakers.
Whatever you want to call it. That's a hate.
You know, there's never been a word that makes me want to play a game less.
Yeah.
Just call them f***ing zombies.
There's two... we'll get to that. There's two ways I think that rumor is dumb. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I do think Sony... I do think that rumor's probably not true. I think
the
Sony...
Red Dead one?
Yeah. Because Sony Adam Boys responded on Twitter and was like, no, this content's been locked for a month. For months. I do think it's true that was never going to be part of the conference. I also think it's that conference was locked for months.
Yeah.
I think that E3 conferences, like literally we've heard stories from people where like the night before an E3 conference, the game gets pulled or added. Like those things are in flux.
Well,
till
so let's talk about that real
late.
Quick, because one of the things that was the most impressive about Sony's conference was it was the least leaked.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that whole...
It was the only one.
It was the hardest one for us to cover because Microsoft and Ubisoft, a run of show leaked for
it's
both.
It's crazy. With the song pairings next to each game. And it was like action game number three with Guns N' Roses. You're like, what?
Yeah. That's the only time... I mean, it's weird, right? Because it mostly just affects us because people watching, it doesn't really matter. But like those are probably the two biggest E3 leaks ever.
Oh,
the fact that it was literally in order what was going to happen, that was crazy. And for news, it was awesome because I was like, okay, Marty, you're up next. It's going to be Dead Rising 4 or whatever. Yeah. Like, we knew it was coming. For Sony, every time we guessed, we were wrong.
Well, we had heard rumors of the Spider-Man thing for a while, but we got the developer wrong.
Yeah.
We all
heard
did.
Sucker Punch.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we should go down the list because we have all the games.
Really quick, I'll be amazed if we get all these bullet points.
Really quick before we go into games, I do agree. Sony was my favorite conference, but the big difference between Sony and Microsoft was that Microsoft conference was 90%, these are things you're going to play in the next 6 to 8 months.
Yes.
And then at the end, they're like, this is the future, and they showed the Scorpio.
Right.
Whereas Sony's was, you're going to play The Last Guardian in the next 6 to 8 months, and then here's stuff you're going to be playing in 2017, 18, and 19.
And I talked about this before on the show about how 90% of the games that were at Sony's E3 last year haven't been released yet. That's crazy.
I would say a huge chunk of the games we saw today in a year or at E3 in a year still won't be out.
So, and that's exactly it. And I think
that's
a big thing. Like, that's a really good goalpost to kind of move around because if you look at that, if you're okay with an E3 press conference just being a showcase of awesome looking, then Sony nailed it. If you're looking for a conference that is full of games that you will be playing within the calendar year, nope.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the big thing is like an E3 press conference is a funny thing because these things started as not for consumers. These started for investors. These started for, hey, this is our upcoming product lineup. This is kind of what we've been working on. But the funny thing is like now it is a show. Mm-hmm. Like it is a competition for who is the most entertaining. And in that way, it's an incredible conference.
I mean, they're
selling, they're selling sizzle, not steak.
Yeah.
And
that's
great because E3 is all about sizzle. It's all about loud noises. They have the element of both surprise and the fact that they were the last ones up.
Yeah.
So they're going to be like the kind of the last thing out on
why does Microsoft not just move? Like, there's no, like, law. I always think it's weird.
Why don't they just say, we're going to do Tuesday morning?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I always find it funny because
Nintendo's not there anymore, so.
But anyway, I mean, I think it does, like, realistically, the fact that these aren't games I'm going to be playing anytime soon does make me kind of, like, guard my expectations and hype, you know?
But they lose either way, right? To me, it's a lose-lose because I think if you come out and you announce 12 release dates and then one by one the dominoes fall and those games get delayed, you get the No Man's Sky situation where everyone's freaking out. And I think, honestly, like, it's better to just not say a date because then you're just...
When does that game come out? Like, August?
August.
2 months.
I think, like, it just makes people angrier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like that last Guardian date, they would not have put a date up if they weren't going to hit it. You know, like, that is, like, once... Like, I love the strategy of once a date is out there, you are doing it because you were positive. Like, I would prefer that.
But also, like, listen to the response that Last Guardian date got.
Yeah, we were screaming.
We were screaming. And that was like any other release date just gets announced casually at E3. You're like, well, yeah, that's a day of the year.
Yeah.
But The Last Guardian, they've teased that for so long.
10 years in the making.
So they can actually next year start putting a date on half the games from this conference.
I mean, that's what's insane.
Flip out.
It, like, if their conference next year was a date for Final Fantasy VII Remake, a date for Kingdom Hearts 3, a date for Shenmue 3, a date for Spider-Man, like if they just went through, they're just a dating sim starring characters. We tried that once on the show. I think like that is still exciting, and they know that, and they know that they can get the kind of a beat from that at PSX or TGS or whatever.
All right, let's start with a man who's not going to get a date, and that his name is Kratos.
Where do you get that young man from then, huh?
From a stork.
He already had a date. The show opened up with the orchestra and then the reveal of God of War. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, for just seeing Kratos on screen was enough, I think, enough excitement for most PlayStation fans. But to see how that demo angled in a completely different direction for the franchise was incredibly exciting.
It was funny that the Marcus Fenix reveal from earlier in the day is like, exactly. It's like, it's literally him poking his head out from the shadows, and you see that he's a beard and that he's older.
Yeah. It wouldn't be AAA video games without white guys with scruffy old beards.
I mean, it's just funny to me because GOW as the abbreviation has confused me for years. Like,
I know.
In acronyms.
That's really
so
funny.
It's like,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, so it's like those two games of all games being that summer.
Dad's back and he's hiding in the darkness again.
But no, the God
beards
of War demo
of whatever.
Was definitely stunning. And Marty wrote a preview that's very good.
I remember IGN's most trafficked preview of E3 2016.
What was it? Was that the one that said it made us care about God of War? Yeah, I saw a lot of negative reception on that.
It was super mixed.
The best preview of all time.
No, it was a fantastic preview, but people's gut reaction was, "What do you mean you didn't like it before?" And it's like, well, because we didn't. Would you guys win a bet?
Why are you throwing
I just gave Marty $5. I'm always asking for money for Red Bulls, but also I figured it's a good time. Congratulations on your preview. You get $5.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Yeah. The annual max.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on the show.
Like, that's a trust.
I'm going to write another really good preview. Okay. We talked on the show how we've all played God of War, but we sort of had mixed feelings about it. I think it was a thing that was very much at a certain place and a certain time it worked. Old God of War worked on the PS2. It worked in the mid-2000s. Like, it worked in that era of games and era of, like, just American society as a whole and storytelling in the medium.
Sure.
But 10 years later, when we have things like The Walking Dead and we have things like The Last of Us, and people expect a little bit more. And it doesn't mean, like, oh, they're making Kratos a pussy and he's not going to kill anything. I'm like, no, you can have both of them. You can have an amazing, violent, mechanically rich action game where you also actually care about the story, and it's not about a dude throwing a woman into a cauldron so that you could proceed through a door.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm making fun of your preview. The preview actually is really good. Yeah. Corey Balrog, director. Had this
Barlog.
Thank you, God. I do that every time. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Corey. He had this incredible quote where he said, "We already made a game about the Hulk. Now we're making a game about Bruce Banner."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that nails it. That is such a powerful quote and such a powerful example of how you can kind of this isn't a reboot, and
no,
it isn't ignoring what happened before.
Story.
It's almost like the hyper violence and all the in his past, like. You couldn't do this game without it. You need to know how awful he was
it's like
and what happened.
I say with every sort of like reboot or anything like that, is it very rarely retroactively deletes the previous iterations of that story, right? Like if you like the old God of Wars, you can go back and play them. Like it sucks that you can't really do that on PS4.
Yeah,
but I'm hoping that gets made available in some capacity. But those games are still there, and you can still play them. I think this is not changing the character; it's actually enriching the character.
Yes,
100%. To me, it's not like removing traits from him that you love or you enjoy. It's giving you more backstory, and it's giving you more personality, and it's giving you more history and lineage
and consequence. He's learning from what he did, which is something you never, like, in a video game, like, we joke about Uncharted all the time, right? Where it's like, Nathan Drake, awesome character, I really love him, I care about him, I care about his story, but he's walking around killing all these people, and it's something that's never really addressed. And, like, the idea of years later, like, because Kratos is immortal, this could be sent 500 years later, we don't know.
Right?
Like, it's so exciting to see somebody being like, okay, like, there are 7 games in this franchise.
Yeah.
Like, what would those do to a person? And what would he be like when he did decide to settle down?
They,
like,
very, they very clearly that. Have a deep connection and passion to the source material here. Like, when I interviewed Corey on our live show, and both on and off camera, I was sort of just like, were you worried about the reception for this? Because, like, the generally, the gut reaction to things changing at all in almost any facet of entertainment media now is venomous vitriol. Just horrible, like,
if,
you know.
If that is something, dear listeners, that you find yourself doing, stop for a moment and realize that we wouldn't have Christopher Nolan's Batman movies if somebody hadn't decided to move past, like, the Adam West Super Friends age. You know, like, media has to grow.
Or stopped at Joel Schumacher Batman.
Or any of your favorite comics. It would all just be golden age forever.
I think
if
they were
changed.
Looking at, like, the Call of Duty trailer and the Girl Ghostbusters trailer, and they're like, oh, we're going to be the next ones. People are going to hate what we're doing with this thing. And that's not the case. I think there's been a very slight outcry about this. But for most people, I think, like I've said before, just go back and play the old ones. They're still there.
Yeah. So they've said, like, hey, this game's going to be filled with crazy, huge set pieces where you're climbing monsters. But they didn't want to show that because, like, we're the dudes who we made all the God of War games. We know how to do that. Trust us. Yeah. We're going to do that. So we want to show you something different.
Like, we hate elephants. We want to kill them.
It's still going to be violent and visceral. Like, you saw that in the trailer.
Things tusk off. And,
People were pulling out all the hidden gods in that trailer.
Oh, you think Loki might be in the background?
Yeah,
the Midgar Serpent. Yeah, there's
also
a lot of really cool stuff.
I talked to him about sort of that, the kind of like Tomb Raider approach of making these kind of open world environments that funnel into more story-driven kind of like hallways and then back into like fields and stuff like that. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah,
I think that's
I love that.
Really cool way to tell a story. And you guys were talking about how that game doesn't break, right?
There's no cut.
It begins. So what we saw is, they said it's the beginning of the game, although the beginning of the game is going to be handled a little bit differently. Like, this is the beginning of the game that they tried to compact into a 10-minute story for the demo. So the game is going to sort of start where you, I think, the kid going in and seeing Kratos, and the game will never cut from beginning to end. So you imagine it's going to be one continuous, whatever, 10-hour journey.
Will the game start with the kid's mother dying? Because it's heavily implied in the trailer.
Oh, no. The whole game is about who is the kid's. Yeah. They're not naming the kid, and they're not saying who the mother is, because I think it's some important thing. One of my theories was that Thor, the kid is Thor, and that Kratos is Odin.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And, God, that's so cool.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some major really, and like, they're really smart about how they're layering in mythology, because I don't think, like, those games kind of beat you over the head with it, but I get the impression this one's going to be a little bit more subtle. And even, like, we saw the BCD, and they were like, yeah, like, if you look closely as you're going through, this area, like, if you watch that demo, because the BCD was just the E3 demo that we saw, but
a little bit extended.
They
were meandering a bit.
And they point out that, like, there's a point where you fight the troll. It's like the big action set piece. If you look, there's like sort of a backstory that's told totally through environmental stuff there, where as you're going, there's evidence that there was a fight, and there's evidence that basically there were men who had captured these trolls and were stringing them up and torturing them and killing them.
And that's why the troll only has one tusk when you come about him. He's already beaten up.
Yeah. If you go back into the woods, you can see there's like all these like trees that are knocked down, and there's like corpses and blood because one of the trolls essentially escaped and wiped out all the men. And by the time you get to the later area, he's like waiting and looking to clean up if there's anyone left.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Damn. Can't wait.
Yep.
Yeah. My only like shortcoming about this is after Skyrim and The Witcher, like, I feel like the whole kind of Norse environment, it's going to be hard to impress me with it, you know, just because I've seen so much of it. There was a rumor that they were considering doing ancient Egypt for a second, which I really hope we get at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the rumor for the next AC. So it's like you might scratch that itch a little bit.
I just want to fight a man with a dog's head.
Yeah.
Anubis.
Oh, you can fight Anubis in Spelunky, available on PSN.
Shut up. All right. Horizon Zero Dawn. It comes out February 28th. Yep. We got to see a big old demo of this. This is officially at that point where I don't want to pay any more attention to it until I get my hands on it.
I'm in.
And so it's pretty close. It's, what, 8 months?
Mm-hmm. We did get to see a bunch of new environments, which look really cool.
Yeah.
They're still sort of like German Alpy foresty rundown city type of thing.
But they've also said Radio Shack dinosaurs.
They showed the map. It's huge. There's gonna be snow areas. There's gonna be barren desert areas. There's gonna be sort of more civilized areas.
Yep. That's what I'm excited about.
Am I the one who got a chance to play it?
I think so. Yeah.
And, I watched in that little area in the behind the booth. I just watched.
And so they said the game is very open. You go through a tutorial, and then once you're sort of out, they're like, you can follow the core storyline just fine, or you can find any of these little settlements, and each settlement and each tribe has its own story arc they can go through. So it's sort of like Skyrim with the Covenants or whatever, yeah. whatever they're called. And then there's also small stories that exist in the world, but the crafting and resource gathering and loot drops are huge in the game. So the bigger the thing you kill, the better the loot you get. But one of the really interesting things is in the options menu, there is a create a quest or create a job. And what that means is if you need whatever, if ore is in the game, you're like, God, I don't want to kill a bunch of things waiting for something to drop ore. You can have the game create a quest for you where the reward is a ton of ore.
Wow.
And then the game will create it like a quest for you. You'll go out, and when you complete that, you're like, well, you got what you need.
I love that.
And that's one of those things like the Nemesis system where I'm like, I want this in every game going forward.
I platinumed Far Cry Primal, mm-hmm. yep. and by the end of that game, there was a lot of like, oh, well, you need to get like 3 tusks from this like one rare. And I searched for, I hunted it for hours and hours and hours, and I'm like, I don't even want this thing. Yeah. I'm just doing it to do it.
Yep.
This kind of system would make it so much better. Yeah. That's just so smart.
I mean, it's easy as kind of just quality of life improvement to have it. So it's as opposed to it being something you're checking on your menu repeatedly. You're like, oh, it just says I've done 2 out of 3 things here. Yeah. Like, I need to go this direction.
Yeah, and the game feels really good when you play it. It feels like
Mortal.
Who
was saying it feels sort of like complex in its systems?
Yeah, it's much deeper than I thought it would be. You have like the Batman detective vision where you have a sheen over the world
Of course it does. I mean, it's a video game in 2016.
Even Persona has that.
But it gives you a lot of info on what's going on in the world and what enemies are weak to, like what type of ammo, whether it's fire or explosive or acidic.
Yeah. Or shooting them directly in the Angus.
Yes.
Watching gameplay, I think. Like, we did a BCD at last year's E3, and they were telling us that it's more of an RPG than you think. Watching it in action, I was like, yep, like, it is, because there have been gameplay demos during conferences and stuff, but yeah, watching people factor in weaknesses and watching people, like, worry about stats and stuff, I'm like, oh, like, this isn't, like, it's hard for me not to think of it as The Last of Us or some, like, third-person Tomb Raider or whatever. Like, it is an RPG, and just because it doesn't have turn-based battles or whatever, like, I think that will be... It's so weird because, like, if Mass Effect is coming early next year and obviously Persona and all that stuff, like, that is going to be a crazy time for RPGs. Yeah. That, like, first, Q1 of next year?
Or, like, third-person, action-driven, non-traditional RPGs.
I mean, if Zelda launches with NX, which I'm sure it will, but...
This really looks like... It looks like a culmination of every video game. It looks simultaneously. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of torn about it because it's almost like... I like it. It looks grounded. Like, it looks like they built a world. The systems look fantastic. It looks fun to explore. Everything you're saying about it sounds great.
You just hate redheaded women.
Yeah, I cannot stand them. It's just, I think they're awful. I think they're the devil. I've worked with them in the past.
It is strange to see them out in the sun so long without exploding.
Yeah. We're just kidding. I'm sorry, Tara. It's kind of like when you go to like a fusion restaurant and they're like, it's the jalapeno sushi inspired tacos with panko crusting, and you're like, there's too much there.
Yeah.
You know,
so you're saying this is kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none?
Well, hearing that there's other environments is extremely reassuring. Yeah. But like, I mean, Shadow of Mordor, for instance, like I'm getting some, you know, there's some mechanical similarities there. And just the fact that it is kind of this, like the fact that you can hop on mounts and run around and there's sort of like stealth elements and, that was great, except when you realize that there's like 2 areas that are sort of the same. So I really, I kind of want to go on blackout with this and just let myself be surprised once it comes out. And just like the idea that there are cities and that there are like deserts and snow areas, that makes me really excited.
Yeah.
I feel like we know 10% of this game. Yeah. Like, I have a feeling
that's a big percentage to know about a game.
I mean,
I'm not saying 10%. Like, I feel like we know 0.1% of story, but I just mean like we know 10% of even mechanics and systems and stuff. I feel like we know there will be so much mechanically to that game. Yeah.
You brought up the mount thing, and I thought it was really cool. The way you mount something is that you sort of approach. It's like a robot yak thing. You shoot a bunch of harpoons at it so that it's sort of like stuck to the ground, and then you go up to its ass and you hack its ass.
Yeah.
And you like hack its ass and you make it nice. I'm gonna keep saying hack its ass.
You shoot a bunch of ropes and then you hack its ass and you mount it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kick it right in the tunt.
Yeah. What the?
Death Stranding.
All right, Death Stranding. Oh my God, it's not a game at all. It is not a game right now. It's a really weird trailer.
Kojima's one of the only people in the world that can be like, hey, look at this weird art house film I made with my friend from The Walking Dead. We're going to watch it together now instead of putting it in the MoMA like a bunch of weird dudes.
Oh, I'm so excited for whatever the hell this is.
Yeah, I want to go back in that dude's mind. You know, it's always like, this is more, Metal Gear Solid 5 was a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. And when I think back on it, I think about the systems and how they worked in Synchronicity and how fun it was and how gorgeous it was. But I also think about how weird it was and how there was a horse on fire and you could put dead bodies in trains on balloons.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff I want to, like, that's Kojima. Everyone makes action games, but only Kojima makes Kojima games.
The stuff in the cutscenes, in like, the Phantom Pain was supposed to be its own game. And he was pretending it was, and he always knew it had to be part of Metal Gear. But, like, the dude has been wanting to quit Metal Gear since Sons of Liberty. You know, he ends on a cliffhanger. He's like, all right, my next game is going to be sort of like a crazy Rambo James Bond game. And they're like, no, but it's a Metal Gear game, right? And he's like, okay, fine. You know? And then, you know, you look at Metal Gear Solid 4, and that's like a, you know, far distance thing.
My next game's going to be vignettes about the arms trade. Yeah. And they're like, well, you got to make a Metal Gear. What can I do? My next game's about a man who wakes up in a hospital and there's horses on fire. He's like, yeah, but it's a Metal Gear. He's like, what can I do?
And they're like, okay, I'm making a weird, weird horror game. Okay, but it's Silent Hill. And he's like, I just want to make my own thing. So Death Stranding is his excuse to do that. I'm really excited to go into this knowing nothing and probably coming out knowing even less because it's a Kojima game.
2019 at the earliest.
Oh, absolutely. Early. He hasn't picked an engine.
No. Yeah.
Like, I mean, legitimately would not surprise me if this wasn't a PS4 game.
I respect that he is being as candid as he is with that, though. Like, they're not like, it'll look in-engine footage. Like, no. They're very much, this is like a concept, a tone trailer, and basically, now, like, he even said in interviews at E3, they're going to start production soon. So, like, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Can you do me a huge personal favor? Can you describe the tone? I'm really interested in hearing this.
It's mysterious. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point too, right? Yeah. Like, I wonder in 2035 when this game's finally out, if we go back to this trailer, if it will even remotely resemble anything in that game.
I screen capped the homepage of IGN during the PS4 press the Sony press conference. I said PS4 because they didn't talk about Vita the entire time. But
got that prediction right.
We got told once we couldn't say like ass, and there was just this huge picture of Norman Reedus's butt in the middle of fudge. Yeah,
that was Eric Sapp, who's on our design team, was capturing screenshots to do like the little thumbnails you see on IGN. And like he would like grab a bunch, and one of them was just a cropped 1280x720 of Norman Reedus' bear that I wanted to use so badly.
He holds that babby, and then it puts paint fingers all over him, and then there's five ghosts in the sky.
So there's a lot of stuff in there that's totally like that is very familiar Kojima themes.
Yes,
he's got environmental disaster, which is something he's been playing with since. He's got spooky babies, which is something he likes to screw with. There's some body horror there.
Squid ink spaghetti is hanging everywhere. Old pasta.
Whales.
Yeah.
Because whales are huge.
Yeah, Moby
Dick. That whole Captain Ahab thing. I mean, remember when it was Moby Dick Studios. Yeah, and it was...
And it did, like...
Were there whales? I forgot about
that. There was a
bunch of dead.
Oh, that's right.
Sea life. Yeah, and we talked about it on our post-show.
Crabs.
I did a...
Snake! That's a jungle mangrove crab. What do I do? Do I fight it? Do I stab it in the face?
I did a rewind of the trailer where, like, it just sounds like I just took a bunch of peyote beforehand. Yeah. I was like, this is why the trailer is an allegory for his career. And sort of by the end of it, I'm like, that seems right.
Yeah.
There's a five everywhere. There's a beached whale. He's crying because he ripped his own baby out of himself. And it disappears because Konami took Silent Hills away from him.
There was that thing on Instagram of him drinking out of the Konami tier mug. Did you guys see that?
I feel like that was fake, but I really liked it.
The mug's not real because no one print a logo sideways like that. But still, that was awesome. Yeah, I mean, the guy's free and he can do whatever he wants now. And we got that, I think, trailer 7 days after Konami revealed their latest in pachinko cash-ins, which was
the snake eater pachinko machine.
Yeah, that what was it? Like this gorgeous cinematic.
It's running on Fox Engine.
Like it looked so good, and then it was just like a pachinko machine. Awful.
Really awful. But
Speaking of other trailers that sort of probably weren't in game but were also super cool, Spider-Man.
Yeah. Probably my favorite surprise of the show.
Oh yeah.
Even with the rumors, I'm so excited for a new Spider-Man game, and that trailer, like, very obviously, even if it's in-engine, like, not gameplay, but, man, there's so much hidden in that trailer, and, like, I'm not a Spider-Man comics guy at all, but one of the biggest things, because there's, like, Oscorp signs and, like, Daily Bugle and all the stuff you'd expect, but one of the big things is apparently there's a villain called Mr. Negative that seems to be the villain. It's his guards, there's imagery all over with his name, there's all this stuff, and
Is he just the internet?
Yeah, he's a commenter. I love the idea of a Spider-Man game where it's not Green Goblin,
Girls
it's not Kingpin, it's not it's not Doc Ock. Like, the idea of, hey, let's do something interesting with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome. Also, Insomniac's perfect for
I'm so excited to fly around New York City. That is my favorite city in the world. It's going to look so gorgeous in that game.
Yeah. Yep.
Playing the old Spider-Man games were some of the, like, the most fun I've ever had playing.
Spider-Man 2 on PS2 is probably still my favorite open world game.
Yeah. My favorite part in Ratchet & Clank was, first of all, pretending I was playing a Rocket Raccoon game. And second, the part where you're just in this big open area and flying around in a jetpack. And I was like, this is like just that traversal. Yeah. And like, if they're putting that into a Spider-Man game and it looks half as good as Ratchet & Clank did, but it's about
and even Sunset.
The thing is, if anyone anyone who doesn't have an Xbox One, the three biggest things you're probably missing out on are Ori and the Blind Forest, Rise of the Tomb Raider, which will hopefully be getting soon, and Sunset Overdrive, most especially, which is Insomniac. And the sensation of movement in that game and of like the build of power, and by the end of the game, the fact that you can traverse the entire city without ever touching the ground. It's all about wall running and bouncing off patio
and
furniture.
It's like, very Spider-Man, if you think about it. I've never played a game where I understood more than ever, like, I can jump right here and make it to there. Yeah. Like, I understood distance. I understood, like, what I would die on and what I wouldn't.
There's a, there's a sort of, like a rhythm to your weight in that game that makes a lot of sense, where you it feels like the momentum actually is calculated to your actions and to the character. And a lot of games are just like, a jump is a jump no matter how you jump. But that game, there feels like there's a push and a velocity to it.
That's awesome. Exciting for, because awesome. Like, Spider-Man 2 nailed the web slinging, and the guy who the guy who made it actually made a Kickstarter based solely on that
just
later. But no game since has gotten it right.
Called Rope Shooter.
The, Spider-Man 3 didn't do it well
Sean
at all.
Paul Ropes,
and then the Amazing Spider-Man games, which actually is on iPad and everything else, is maybe the closest. It's also on Vita, but it never felt right. And I mean, think Insomniac can find it.
I'm really excited about this just because it's the first Spider-Man game. I guess we got, there were those ones that were like, there were the movie ones, the tie-ins, and then there was like Shattered Dimensions. And
there was the Ultimate Spider-Man one.
Ultimate Spider-Man was the last one that I remember being like, oh, this actually looks like comic books, and it looks like it's kind of doing its own thing. Mm-hmm. It's not strictly trying to tie to any source material. I'm really happy this isn't somehow branded. Like, I'm really happy this isn't MCU branded.
It's not
like
coming.
This is totally its own thing.
It's its own costume, even.
So what I think,
I don't like the costume, but screw it, whatever.
I think some of the, I'm almost positive there'll be others you can choose
from. If they don't throw Spider-Gwen in there in 2016, 2017, 18, one of this comes out.
So, yeah, really quick, the last thing about this. Andrew, you want to go a little in depth on sort of Marvel gaming as a whole?
Yes, yeah. The other really exciting thing about this was they announced it, everything went up, and then Marvel.com put up a blog post where they kind of casually mentioned, oh, by the way, this is like the first big push from Marvel Gaming, which is sort of rethinking our brands. And Polygon did a really interesting interview with kind of the head of that about what they want to do. And the only two we know right now are this one and then Telltale's Marvel game that they announced last year, but we don't know what it is. They said we'll be finding out more this year. And actually, Marty, you'll have a feature coming of kind of what we'd want to see from certain devs. But it's really exciting in that, like, the MCU was born out of, hey, we gave away our rights to Fox and Sony and whatever. Let's do our own. And Marvel Studios is all internal.
Yes.
And if they can do that for gaming, like, they'll farm it out to devs, obviously. But, like, if they can own their brands and really, like, be as good as what this looks like, that sounds amazing.
And the MCU has done such a great job of pairing superheroes with incredible directors and talent, like getting people like Shane Black and Joss Whedon and James Gunn. And then you look at, like, we see the casting and everyone for Black Panther, and we're like, holy crap, this is perfect.
Yeah.
So to imagine that sort of thoughtful care and actual want to have a good product
really
in games. License games were a joke. We've talked about it on this show forever. Like, license games for so long were an afterthought and a cash and joke.
Yep.
Like, especially a lot of Activision stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas with this,
think about like the Silicon Knights X-Men game.
Yeah.
You know, like, think about like that era.
I've never gotten so angry in a preview event.
Right?
I saw that and I was like, I don't want to write about this because it's going to be hard not to just completely.
Worked alongside Greg Miller for years. He's one of the biggest Spider-Man fans I know. Every single time a Spider-Man game would come to his desk, I would watch the excitement disappear from him. You know, because it would just be like, this is going to be it. This is going to be the good one. They're going to bring it back to its roots. No, it's gone.
We're finally going to swing the craze.
It's the Sonic cycle. Yes. Have you ever seen that? Yeah. Where it's like, everyone, it's like, oh man, they're making a new Sonic game. Oh man, his friends are in it. It's just like that, like, forever.
The best I could hope for Telltale is that, like, I'm kind of burnt out on Telltale games. Like, I want to give the new Batman like a benefit of the doubt, but like it doesn't scratch that itch for me. The best thing I could hope is that it's a Matt Fraction Hawkeye inspired game, because I don't know if you guys have seen that comic, but it's like the most gorgeous.
Yep.
Like, it plays with like the visual medium. Like there's entire pages where it's all like the dog's perspective and like weird stuff like that.
I think,
it's all like silhouette.
I think Telltale's Batman's gonna be really fascinating. I think it's gonna be great because they're focusing more on the detective Bruce Wayne aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean we can transition into that.
And the repercussions of that character and what he does treading into Batman's world. So basically, like he lets a character free in a cutscene, and that character comes back to fight Batman later on.
And
there's
also
like politics at play. Like there's a lot of really interesting stuff they're doing.
They're basically treating Batman and Bruce Wayne as separate characters in it.
Yeah.
And during the demo, they were saying that like later on, like let's say episode three, whatever, like halfway through, there will be like whatever it is, whichever villains they're focusing on. It's like, oh no, like Killer Croc is loose in the city. Do you want to fix it as Bruce Wayne or as Batman? And depending on how you approach that situation, it will fundamentally change episode 4 and 5. Like, it'll totally transform.
I did an interview with Job from Telltale and Laura from Telltale at our stage, and I jokingly they were talking about how your decisions have impact, and I'm like, I jokingly said like, oh, so it's kind of like Gotham will remember that, and they were like, actually, that's exactly what's happening here, and I'm like, that's such an interesting different take than. You know, I don't know, the 7th Rocksteady game where you're just in the car or you're flying around, you're collecting trophies. Like, those games are fun. I get it.
No, we need this.
But this is important. Like, I think it's cool to have this story. And look, like, we're getting Batman VR. Like, we're going to keep getting Rocksteady Batman games probably forever. Yeah. Or some studio will be making them.
No,
but I think it's really cool.
He's the world's greatest detective. Yeah. An adventure game is totally suitable for that.
Yeah. And the voice cast they've got so far is really great.
I mean, although,
Troy Baker as Bruce Wayne, it's Laura Bailey as Selina Kyle.
Travis Willingham as Two-Face or Harvey Dent. Yeah.
Dude just Sully is Carmine Falcone.
Yeah, which is really good.
But some people are a little worried about Troy.
Troy was awesome as Bruce Wayne because he was just playing Troy and he sounds, you know, the way you would want him to. His Batman voice is a little weird. I think there's still time to change that, but it just maybe they'll modulate it or something. It'll sound fine.
I don't know why he went with a Welsh accent. I thought that was really strange.
No, but I mean, in all seriousness, it sounded like him making fun of somebody. Like it's like just someone doing a really deep, low register Batman voice that just sounds a little off.
It's weird because that's what we all thought when we first started hearing Christian Bale's voice. And we got okay with it after.
But
a while.
No, this isn't like that's what I'm saying. This isn't that. This isn't like
that
was
BBS,
a weird choice.
Right?
Yeah.
It is basically him just talking like this and very, like, it sounds like how that was when I just did that. Like, it sounds very much like Troy Baker.
The Batman, don't you know?
That's seriously what it sounds like. People, during the demo, the whole demo I thought was great, but when Troy started speaking, people were snickering. Like, people were laughing at it. And I hope they put an effect on it or just something because it just sounds weird.
I mean, when I saw the Tales from the Borderlands demo the first time, it was literally a different voice actor for
Sam Witwer.
Sam Witwer was Reese, and Troy Baker ended up playing him. So there's still time from now to then to.
Troy Baker has now played Bruce Wayne, Batman, Joker, and Two Face,
and Lego Batman.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yep. The big question will be if Joker's in this, who will be his voice?
Yeah. It'll just be him, too.
Do we should talk about Batman VR.
Yeah, let's pivot into Batman VR.
Did you guys all get to see it? Or?
I did not.
I got to play it.
Okay.
Anyone else?
Walk? I didn't know.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. It was on PSVR. You get in. You put it on. It uses Move controllers. And the first thing is it's a menu screen. You can choose the Batcave or you can choose a crime scene. But you're on a rooftop. And when you step forward and look over the roof, it's like that sensation of like, oh, God, I'm so high up. Like, it was perfect. It was also the best looking PSVR thing I've ever played. Just in terms of visual fidelity. We've talked before about how, on paper, Oculus and Vive are objectively more powerful than the PSVR. But I look at this, I'm like, oh, in the hands of someone like Rocksteady, who make some of the most incredible looking games, like, there's no fear that a PSVR is going to be too underpowered.
And Shuhei Yoshida did confirm that every game at E3 was running on existing PS4 hardware.
Yes, there was no Neo, no PC Neo or anything. In the two demos, one of them was you're at your piano and Alfred comes over and you can pick up a couple things. You can pick up a phone and you get chewed out via voicemail by Vicky Vale for standing her up the night before. You can open drawers and look at pictures. You hit the keys and no matter what you hit the specific keys and then you go down the elevator. But you slowly, you become Batman. Like, there's a mask that's in front of you. You take it and you put it on your face. There's a utility belt that you strap on your waist.
So
like, literally
cool.
By doing this, you get batarangs that you can just start throwing at whatever you want. You get a grappling hook that you can aim anywhere, fire, and pull things towards you. And it's just, and then you get down to the Batcave and you see the giant, weird Penny. I don't know why that dude had a penny. And then you see the dinosaur. I don't know why that dude had a dinosaur.
It's also a Batcave thing, right?
I know it's a Batcave thing. Yeah. They're like
trophies from old fights.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah. What weird dinosaur Penny Man did he fight?
They explain it in the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the animated series did it on it too. The Penny's Two Faced. The dinosaur was from the museum in
with Turok.
Yeah, he just stole it. Yeah. He's like back when Batman went through that weird crime spree phase where he just stole things.
This belongs in a museum. He literally stole it from a museum.
He has a couple of Pollocks that he stole and a couple of
Yeah.
Just beautiful, classic old paintings.
Yeah. But then the second part of it was a crime scene investigation where, without spoilers, a character gets murdered and you have to recreate the crime scene and find out what happened. And you use this weird method of fast-forwarding and rewinding time as you rebuild what happened.
Oh, yeah. That was
also in the next game we're going to talk about, which is very strange. But, yeah, and so you're rebuilding this, but the way you move is you're not physically moving around the environment. There's a series of nodes that you hop to. So there's six spots you can hop to across the alley and up in the catwalks and everything. And it's all about observing this. Like, this was the World's Greatest Detective portion. Like, those things in Arkham Knight where you're trying to solve a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. It was that, but fleshed out more.
Right. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and so you're looking for fingerprints, and you're trying to find the moment where this character's neck broke so that you can find out what happened and how this character actually died. There's probably cummus everywhere. There's probably ropes everywhere that you look and you...
Did you say cummus?
Yeah, cummus.
Like hummus, but made with... Okay. Is this a PSVR launch game?
They said this year. I don't think they specifically said...
Okay. So launch.
I would assume so.
That's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. So when you look down, do you see your bat feet?
You don't see your bat feet, no.
Really?
So?
Yeah.
No, why?
Do you know he's wearing sandals? Like a weird dude.
And he's wearing shorts?
Yeah.
The weird thing about Batman is he only dresses the top half of his body, and a lot of times he just has like a hanging wang.
One of the scariest things that Batman does is he's just naked from the waist down. And criminals are a cowardly and superstitious and homophobic breed, so, you know.
Yeah, they don't like it at all.
So let's talk about another cool detective adventure, which is Detroit Become Human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was... just what they showed behind closed doors was kind of an extension of the E3 demo. Mm-hmm. So it was basically you're Connor, you are an AI, like you're not a human, and I think
Cage said you play entirely as androids in this.
You do, and that was the cool thing about the BCD is that you're playing as this android named Connor, who is like an investigator, hostage negotiator, whatever, and it's that same scenario where you're going out to the patio. A deviant android is holding the daughter of the family hostage. And basically what this explains as you're going through and finding clues is that there's evidence that he was being replaced. So the father of the family, there's all these pictures of him with the daughter growing up and he's an integral part of the family and blah, blah, blah. The father purchased a new model of android to replace him and he saw it and snapped.
That's very like Black Mirror.
Yeah, totally.
That a lot.
And so what was cool about it was you're going through and there's like a few different rooms or you can choose to talk to or not to talk to the cops. You can collect data by like, so the first playthrough they did behind closed doors was they walk straight out to the balcony and you sacrifice yourself and you save the girl. And then he was like, well, let's try and do it differently. So the second time it was more about finding the clues to like you discover that he was going to buy a new one. And then the whole time there's this live, constantly fluctuating probability rating that you can pull up of what are the odds that you're going to get out of this successfully. And every time you find a clue, like something you can sympathize with him or you find out his name or little things where when you go out, they earn you points with him.
Oh, man.
And you see the meter ticking up. Mm-hmm. And the way it worked was like you would come into a room. And so in the dad's bedroom, there's a closet and like clothes are on the floor. And there's a suitcase thrown on the ground and you go to the suitcase and Connor, every android will have like an ability. Connor's was a reconstruction. And you basically look around the room and you figure out, okay, this suitcase is here. It's actually not a suitcase. It's a gun case. And you look around and see where clothes are strewn and you reconstruct the situation where then in wireframe, you can rewind using the touchpad and it shows very clearly that the android came to the room, opened the closet in a rush and knocked something down, pulled down this case and it knocked a bunch of clothes in the ground and you're just seeing where stuff was strewn. Mm-hmm. And as you're playing through that, you can slowly find other clues. So like one of my favorite ones was you find the spot where he murdered the father because he shoots him point blank, but the body rocked backwards and the father dropped his iPad. And if you walk in the room, you won't see the iPad. But if you reconstruct the crime scene and then you're rewinding, if you get it on the perfect frame, you see a clue. And when you get that clue, it's the iPad, which slid across the room, and you open it, and it's open to the purchase confirmation of the new Android.
I love that.
So it's cool because you're getting more info.
Are you moving around? Is it like third person? Does it feel like moving around in heavy rain?
In heavy rain, yeah. And the coolest thing about that BCD they confirmed was you can die, and there's no game over state. There aren't fail states. Yeah. Like, you can die, and then you just never play as that character again, and you move on to someone else.
Right, which means that we're all going to have a different... We're going to drive a different path through this game.
Yeah, each one I'm really excited about this. Like, I feel like... I mean, it's kind of early to say, but I feel like this could be... like David Cage finally biting off the right amount to chew.
Well, so I said this on our post show, but like one of the biggest problems I've had with his games is that the sort of the animation and the acting is usually very wooden.
It's the uncanny valley.
It's the uncanny valley, but making them androids kind of fixes that.
Yeah.
Also, like, this was so, I don't know, like, I personally thought it was so well done. Like, I thought the acting in that demo was really, like, pitch perfect all the way across the board. Even, like, the hardened police chief who doesn't want to work with you, it's like, you get the impression that, like, these people have a history with androids. They don't want to deal with you. Like, they, in some way, their life has been affected, and they resent that an android is cleaning up their mess.
Yeah, I feel like Cage and Quantic Dream, it's always been a studio, like, I've super respected the studio, but I've always felt like their reach extended their grasp.
Yes,
totally. Yeah.
And it finally feels like this might be the one. And I also love the idea, I mean, the fact that it takes place in Detroit, and that, like, Detroit, which is America's heart of industry, which led this country for the better part of a century in keeping it afloat, and the idea that that technology meant so much to the city, and now the city is turning on its technology in the future is very interesting to me.
And that's why I love that in the trailer, they're not ignoring that. Like, you're going, like, I loved the trailer was driving through suburban Detroit, and you see, like, boarded up homes, and you see, like, it's really smart of them. I hope the game involves that.
All 8 of the miles. I really hope, like, we've seen 2 of the characters so far. We've seen the detective, and then we've seen Kara.
Who was in the
Carl?
The original demo.
The tech demo. I'm hoping this thing just has, like, a dozen really interesting characters that sort of weave in and out.
I mean, it sounds like it will, which I think that's, like, one of the things that Heavy Rain was so awesome at. Like, it had very few side characters. Now, like, not all of them were as compelling as the other ones were, but the way they all kind of came together and interacted, and then, like I said before, like, the way we all played that game differently. One of my favorite memories of being at IGN was coming in when that game came out and just talking to people and being like, oh, you let that, like, there's that one fight you have in the market where if you let that thug guy get away, like, he torments you later in the game. It becomes a problem. Yeah. But if you beat his ass right there on the spot, like, that's the end of that dude's story. Yep. And if this game does a lot of stuff like that, I'm totally in.
Yep. It's the same thing with Until Dawn. Like, when Alana first started working here, both of us were, like, obsessed with Until Dawn. And her, like, hearing her playthrough and my playthrough, I'm like, oh, no, all of those people died in mine.
Yeah, I love that. Cool. And they call it, I think they call it bending, if I remember right, is, like, the Quantic Dream thing. Mm-hmm. That's, like, their term for it. And he said in there that, like, this is, I mean, they were pretty open about the fact, like, this is more Heavy Rain than Beyond. Like, they were leaning more into that original idea.
Yeah.
Beyond.
No, I'm excited about this. I love just exploring environments and finding those, like, I hate audio logs. I think they're really lazy.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about text files, but finding, like, an object that tells you something is always kind of interesting.
And so, like, this, I totally agree, and this demo was one of the coolest uses I've ever seen of that, where, like, the first time you played it, he just walks through the house, but if you go, like, carefully and meticulously, like, and you can't go too meticulously because the longer you take, the more that probability timer is ticking down. But he finds, like, a picture frame, and you can look at it, inspect it, and put it back down and keep walking. Or it's the future, it's a video. Mm-hmm. And if you play the video, it's literally this girl when she's, like, 5 being like, I love you, Daniel, and, like, hugging the android. And then you know his name is Daniel. Yeah. You know he has a relationship with the daughter. And it's just, it rewards you for taking a second.
Yeah. Before we move on, just one of those sort of off topic, one of the best uses of, like, environmental and object storytelling to me is in Gone Home when you go into your father's, like, writing room.
Oh,
and you see a letter from his publisher. And it's like, hey, we signed your book. We're going to get 20,000 copies out there. We're so excited. And they go a little bit further, and there's just empty bottles of booze everywhere. And they go a little bit further, and there's a ton of unopened boxes of the book because it did not sell. And it never tells you any of that.
Nope.
But I'm like, oh, my God, that is so good.
And even the safe in that game, like, if you go and find, like, the safe that has evidence of, like, him being molested and all these, like, things
and
that, like, get super real.
Yeah, really good.
God, that game. Man.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of molestings and drug addicts.
But yeah, real quick PSA, that game's free on PlayStation Plus this month. And if you haven't played it, it takes 2 hours. Just do it. Just jump in there. Don't read anything about it. Don't hear anything. Just go do it.
Yeah, in spite of the fact we just kind of spoiled the big chunk.
Sorry.
So,
there you go.
Last Guardian comes out October 25th. Did somebody play it?
I did.
You played it?
Yeah.
Holy, what?
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
That's
what happens when you don't play Zelda. I didn't play Zelda. I was the only person here that didn't play Zelda in the world. Well, you didn't play Zelda.
Oh. I didn't play anything. It sucked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I play like two things.
But yeah, it was like the opening 45 minutes or so of the game. It opens with narration. Like the main boy is an old man telling the story of what happened with him. You see these cave paintings of all these different creatures, and it stops for a second on Trico, and then sort of fades into the boy trying to, you know, you don't know why he's there, but Trico is tied up and he's got all his arrows everywhere. And it's about freeing the bird dog. One of the things that stuck out to me was Bird Dog's always been super cute. In this demo, that thing's terrifying.
Really?
Like, his power and his strength, like the first time he makes a noise, it knocks you back. Like when you get this mirror shield and you point towards what you want him to destroy, his eyes glow this terrifying color and he shoots lightning at it and just blows up walls.
Well, he reminds me of like when you see somebody walking like just a really ugly dog and you're like, yeah. I like dogs. That's a hideous dog.
Yeah,
you're still
more,
cute because
that's
you're
more
a dog.
Bird than dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that scary thing where like I had a friend where I lived in New York who had a pit bull.
Yep.
And it was probably the sweetest dog I've ever met. And it was just very cute, would always like cuddle with you and was very happy to see everybody. But there was a night when I guess someone broke into his apartment.
Yeah.
And he said that dog like probably would have killed that guy. Like it was barking, like she was tied up next to his bed, but like he said like he had never seen her that angry and she went into like full on guard dog mode.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
that scary God thing
dog.
Where like,
I said that guard dog.
I mean, it's that scary thing of like an animal can be cute and friendly yeah. and love you, mm-hmm. but also is capable of like yeah. unbelievable destruction.
Yep. Yeah. Also, birds are terrifying.
Birds are very scary. I don't like birds at all.
Just horrible creatures yeah. of the sky.
But dogs are great.
Dogs are real cool.
A lot of the puzzles here were the stuff we saw at the demo last year at E3. I won't go into too much just to avoid spoilers.
Yep.
I'm super excited that this game is coming out in a few months. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. It's very strict. Like, everything in the world fits in its art style except the kid.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about.
I love that.
Which like, kind of makes
so
sense.
Weird. The kid yeah. looks like he's from a town in Wind Waker.
Yeah. yeah.
And he's just like this... What is it, like Chiaroscuro or whatever drawings? Like, yeah, just pops up into this game.
In
Rogue One.
Didn't you have a theory about that, or was that Justin?
No, I thought that maybe it's intentional that the kid is from, you know, this is representing the fact this kid is from another world or another place. Mm. Just like the kid Nico was, just like.
And there's
multiple
the bird dogs now.
There's now multiple bird dogs. Yeah. You don't know, like, one of these
Which
bird dogs is going to die.
There's bird dog and bad dog.
I like the story of a dog bird. I like the story of like the boy and his bird dog, and knowing that there's multiple of them is like a little less interesting to me because it means that a bunch of them are gonna get just bite the bullet, fall in that hole.
I'm excited to play this game.
Yeah,
I'm excited to like not talk about it much more and just play it. You know,
October 25th.
Yeah. Movement feels a lot like Ico and Shadow for better or for worse. It feels realistic, quote unquote, which is also a little weird and
like you don't
inertia heavy.
You're not having fun. You're just kind of like.
But I cannot wait. Like, this is by far
great.
Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus and Ico are on PlayStation now, so if you have that,
check those out.
Give them a shot. I will say I tried playing Ico again recently, and it doesn't hold up that well.
Yeah.
The sort of like non-static, slightly movable camera is very
awkward. The camera's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still, I reviewed it for 1UP when the HD collection came out, and it's still.
I think its
pros are so much better than its cons.
I feel like for me, I think Ico is great. I think Shadow of the Colossus is a masterpiece.
Yeah,
like I think
totally
that is like that separation.
Yeah. There were also a couple, just mentioning it's early, but there were a couple pretty savage frame rate hits when I played it.
Mm.
But we're still a couple months off.
All right, well, you know, fingers crossed. Days Gone.
This one, Sony Bend, they have a game.
We did it!
The very first thing I did the second that logo came up was tweet a Colin, who has been asking about this for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Marty and I both saw this behind closed doors as well. Eric Jensen was there leading the demo. Very nice man. Podcast man, listener.
Yeah.
And I think
Eric.
I think this game technically is gorgeous. I think it is that weird... Like, it's such a trite thing to say about a video game, but I'm like, oh my God, there's so many things on screen at once, and performance doesn't suffer.
Oh, yeah.
And in that way, it's ridiculous. Like, there were, like, legitimately probably 500 zombies or freakers running at me on screen, or running at Deacon, rather. The thing I'm concerned about with it is that, like, there's a lot of zombie fatigue out there. A game like The Last of Us stands because I care so much about the characters.
Mm-hmm.
man, do I not care about Deacon yet? Yeah. And there's time for that. We don't know the story. We don't know a lot. Yeah, but I think it's missing that heart right now.
Yeah, you mentioned zombie fatigue. It was the fourth zombie game that we saw, and it was the E3 hadn't even started because we had Telltale's Walking Dead Season 3, we had Dead Rising 4, and we had State of Decay 2.
Yep, and that's the thing. Like,
but
it's
I think it's cool to note how different each one of those games are.
Yeah.
I mean, this game is at least going with the World War Z approach of zombies.
It's somewhat grounded in reality.
Yeah, but again, like, Pikmin, basically.
Yeah. And like, I wrote a preview about this that, yes, Marty, it wasn't as good as your God of War one, but I wrote a preview about this, about the interesting thing being that you need the environment, that you are never going to wipe out these zombies. There's no, it's not like The Last of Us where you're like, okay, there's eight, I'm going to plot out my strategy for how to take out all eight.
Interesting.
This is like, you are never going to win. Even if you had infinite ammo, there's no world where you're going to wipe these guys out. So what you have to do is go low or stay high or put obstacles in your way. Like, you are just buying yourself every second that you can to get away from them.
I think you do have infinite ammo, because at least in the demo, it just seemed like you never ran out.
Yeah, they said that demo was like, to teach you concepts, they kind of dialed everything to 11. So, like, you were more powerful than you will be in the real game.
I feel like I'm slightly more optimistic about this game than the rest of you guys are.
I'm pretty excited.
Dude, my thing is, like, I'm kind of neutral right now. Mm. I just want to know more. I think the thing is, they were so smart about how they shut off the tech, and the demo was really just a good exploration of, like, you're probably screwed, but here's how you can buy yourself time. But the thing is, like, I only want to buy myself time when I have a goal, when I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, even Dead Rising, like, I make fun of Dead Rising, but it's like the games where you're trying to save your daughter and
Dead
find
Rising
her.
Makes fun of Dead Rising.
Well, yeah, but it's like, at least that hook, the core story hook of like Dead Rising 2, trying to get your daughter the injection she needs so she doesn't become a zombie. Like, those things keep you playing in a weird way, or the time limit, or whatever it is.
I think we just don't know what those are yet.
Because that's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Character-driven, story-based, open-world game set in Portland, the Pacific Northwest, which I think is great because
that's where Bend is too.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like when Sucker Punch did Seattle. Like, they know that city better than anyone.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I started saying. I have no doubt those things exist. We just don't have them yet, and it's hard not starting with that because, like, again, like, I get the tech, I get everything, but like, until I know that, I don't know why I care if Deacon escapes.
Yeah, I was almost more impressed by the story trailer near the beginning of the conference.
Yeah.
That was like the VO and Deacon talking about his life.
Sam Witwer, right?
Yeah, Sam Witwer.
Yeah.
And then...
hey, Sam.
Yeah. Two mentions this episode.
And then, the actual demo I thought was an impressive tech demo. I liked the fact that there's Last of Us mild crafting things where you combine two things and you make a cool thing.
Yeah, we saw him make a Molotov cocktail. I think it's literally the exact same interface as The Last of Us.
Which I'm totally fine. Like, they did just fine.
I think we were saying that earlier. That was the thing, though. I totally agree. The story trailer was rad. The demo, I like the demo. I think it's like there's a lot of good stuff there. It was just a weird note to end that conference on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with that. I mean, for a conference that started with an orchestra, it seems weird to end with a guy on a roof shooting mobs of, like, just a fountain of human beings.
Yeah.
And but they're not zombies. That's the weird thing. Like,
they're still alive is the whole
thing.
They
have a brain virus, which is very Last of Us.
Yep. I mean, I feel bad comparing this to The Last of Us so often, but there are a lot of comparisons to be made.
Well, in lieu of that game getting a proper sequel anytime soon, I think this is going to be nice to fill that void. If Naughty Dog says, hey, we are making Last of Us 2, it'll be really weird to see those both of those games side by side.
But also, like, and we were talking about the release dates earlier, they didn't even say a year for this. So this is like, I think this is a game that, like, maybe we get next fall, maybe there's a lot left.
I mean, like I was saying, comparing this to Microsoft's conference, all of those games at Microsoft's conference, and even probably the hardware, are going to be out in 2017.
Yeah.
Most of them out late 2016, early 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised if a handful of the things we've talked about are 2018 and beyond.
I would say just going down the list real quick, like, God of War is probably a 2019 game.
No,
19.
I think that could be next fall.
I think so. I think it'll get a February 2018 release date.
Yeah.
And it'll get delayed to fall 2018 or like February 2019.
I think it gets a like September 2017 release date and then maybe slips to like February 2018.
Okay. I mean,
but
again,
I definitely think that game.
I would love to be wrong. Mm-hmm.
And we'll all be dead by the time Death Stranding comes out.
And also, don't forget that like they outed that game as being in development at PSX 2014. So it's
Corey
they just started.
Specifically said they've been working on it for 3 years so far.
Yeah. So
and
I think
that
game
have a lot more work to do.
Yeah, but I mean, coming out next year is still a lot more work. That's 18 months of work. Like, I still think that that's an X-Fall game.
Okay.
I mean,
I would love to be playing this game next fall.
Yeah.
My guess is February 2018 at the earliest.
If that is a 2019 game, it's so weird thinking about, like you're saying, like, what happens in between? Because, like, you know, Horizon is a great example. That was a fall game, got delayed to February. We know that's coming. We have No Man's Sky coming in August.
I mean, this is a problem. Sony doesn't have the Nintendo problem. Like, yeah, they have third parties, so it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, you'll mm-hmm. be playing Watch Dogs 3 and Assassin's Creed Egypt and all this other.
Yeah,
and that was last year. Like, the system won on the strength of Battlefront and Fallout and all of the things that people were just buying more on PS4. Yeah, no.
I think the real question is, like, which version of PS4 are we playing these games on?
Yeah.
Like, that's a good point.
Are generations dead?
Yep. Yeah, that's crazy.
What's left? Man.
Three left, because we did Batman and Telltale.
So you want to talk about the RPGs really quick?
Yeah, real quick. Final Fantasy was at both conferences. Man,
there's no garbage can over there. You just threw it in the corner.
Just into the abyss. The Xbox conference demo was a Titan boss battle that it was kind of hit or miss with most people. I don't think it really...
I think it started really strong, and then it just kept going, and you're like, okay.
It was hit with some people? Really? That demo was...
When you watch a different playthrough of that demo, a really clean playthrough that's being played really well, the demo's cool.
Yeah, so what happened there? I mean, that was...
I think it was just tough.
Really
it was just playing on stage and tough. And
Jason from Kotaku noticed, if you go back and watch the press conference footage, there's a very clear moment where it seems like they're stopping the live demo and switch to pre-recorded footage. Because, like, there's a single frame jump where Noctis, like, moves back, which is totally fine. I mean, people are very upfront about the fact that, like, a lot of the time they have a backup demo or they're playing it backstage or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, I think... that footage, I don't think, wowed people. But then the footage during the Sony conference
was really
and then
cool.
The flying car footage.
The flying
released.
Car thing is the part where I'm like, okay, I'm sold.
Yeah.
Stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your car essentially turns into an airship, and it turns out this open world. You can just fly wherever you want and land wherever you want.
And they tease that during the Uncovered event, but now you see like just the scope of how high you get that it is basically your airship in this game.
Very cool.
It's so very cool. Also, then, there's the VR stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The VR stuff, I didn't see it. I heard it.
I don't give a crap about fighting that monster, but you can ride around that woman in that car.
Yeah,
and you're just like, you're playing, we're in a car together, madam.
Mm-hmm. You're playing as Prompto, which is kind of the goofier. He's the guy who almost looks like Baby Cloud.
And he's the guy who takes he takes pictures, and then when you go camping at the end of the day, he shows you what the pictures are. Sort of like the weird dude in
Mr.
Pickles.
Butt photos.
I like
the idea that there's that scene where he's just doing selfies in front of that horrible monster.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a, like, one of my favorite things about Jurassic World was just sort of like, hey, there's amazing happening right in front of us, but it doesn't matter because I have a phone. I get to look at that instead. It was really awesome just to sort of be like, I'm burying the lead here. It's me in front of a monster's butt.
Yeah,
they do. The anime is actually really funny with that, too. Like, that's like in Brotherhood. He's doing a bunch of that.
Yeah.
And then you have your Persona minute.
Yeah, Persona was there. We saw uninterrupted gameplay for the first time. In all seriousness, like, that game is so pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, and the style stuff is really cool. Like, those games, Persona 3 and 4, are PS2 games. And so it's really crazy seeing that weird next generation feeling of like, oh, like, towns are populated with hundreds of people and the school hallways are crowded and there's so many smart things. You accept a mission early on in the footage they showed us, and you're in a classroom, and rather than just some stupid prompt popping up on screen, it literally, like, magically, as though by a ghost, the chalkboard behind you says, mission start, and then when you accept it, it, like, erases, and there's smear on the chalkboard, and, like, there's just so much style to that game. It's so smart. We saw job system stuff. We saw all kinds of cool battle changes in Battle Now. Because, like, the whole motif of the game is that you're thieves and that it's, like, a prison thing as developer. I've
never seen Max more poor.
And, I'm sorry.
No, I love that this makes you happy. That's why
I'm really excited about it.
I have a preview about it. Read it there.
I
think Max's problem is that he gets this excitement at home with his fiance, and then he gets it at work from you.
Yeah.
So.
His other fiance.
His work husbands.
Literally probably buying a second PS4 just so I don't have to fight over it with Jen because she's going to be so hooked on this game.
8 months, even until February. But yeah, I put up a thing. It's on IGN's call. Persona 5 is dripping with style. You can read that, or just look at my Twitter, where I just babble about Persona constantly. Resident Evil was probably that was one that had been rumored for so long, but was another just cool name brand to have pop in the Sony conference. And also, the biggest thing is it's out in January.
Yeah, January 24th.
And you can play the demo right now.
You can play the demo right now. Have you guys played it?
Yeah.
Lana and I got real saucy and played with that. It's spooky. It's super derivative of PT and of what's the other one? Outlast.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There's a couple really, really cool mechanics in there.
The VHS thing especially.
Yeah, there's this whole part where basically, like, and I think it's a really nice alternative to the whole, like, let's go to the crime scene and rewind the footage. Mm-hmm. You have to track down a VHS cassette, which are the scariest form of electronic media, and then you pop it in, and then suddenly you're playing as the camera guy who shot the VHS.
Yeah, which is great.
And it's so cool because you're like, if you go around and you pay attention to the environment, there are all these cues of like, things are sort of different.
This thing got moved since the VHS was shot, so maybe after the VHS, I need to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, that's really smart. The way you're filming things, the characters get mad at you for not, like, I was just sort of gawking at all the details.
Whereas your producer would be like, hey, what are you doing?
He's like, dude, catch up with me.
Yeah.
And I could imagine it was really funny because I played it like, I shut off all the lights in my apartment and my wife was asleep in the other room, and I played like the first 90 seconds of it and then put the controller down and picked up my phone. I was like, hey, has anyone else played this? I just want to make sure my friends are talking to me right now.
It's pretty spooky.
Yeah,
It's pretty spooky because everything in a flashlight beam is pretty spooky.
Yeah.
I hate how just completely mired in familiar tropes it is.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's a gross old house. Like, PT was scary because it was a totally, like...
normal apartment?
It felt like a lived-in home.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that just happened to be a little bit decrepit.
At least they're horror tropes and not Resident Evil tropes. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing that seems really smart to me is that, like, yes, we've seen a lot of horror, but at least it's horror. Like, this seems to be, at least from, like, the press conference footage, because I haven't played the demo yet, seems to be at least returning it to horror. And, like, it sounds so stupid, but, like, Krupa from our UK team went and played it, and he was like, oh, they confirmed that there's still herbs in it.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's so funny that, like, that was actually interesting that there's still little franchise staples.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like there's Umbrella Corps. It doesn't seem like there's...
Well, so you find a photograph, and if you look, the Umbrella Corps logo's on the side of a helicopter.
Interesting.
It has a couple endings. It still has some mysteries. There's, like, a finger you can find, and no one knows what you do with the finger.
I'm actually bummed about that. This sort of felt like when you break up with someone for a while and you run into them again and they're like, oh, I'm different, I swear. And then
that's why I'm surprised
they're back in their old routine.
Because the rumor was a reboot. And when the 7 came up on screen, I was legitimately surprised.
Because it made the logo cool. But it's also called 7: Biohazard. And in Japan, it's called Biohazard 7:
Resident Evil. Which is really cool. Side note, there are multiple endings to this demo and there are like weird secrets that people are still uncovering, and Capcom saying that there's a bunch of stuff no one's found yet. There's an axe in the demo that no one knows how to use for anything. I fell into this weird web on the subreddit for this game the other day, and I was just like, man, the people are super into this, and this is really fascinating. It's not like PT levels of crazy yet, but there's a lot of stuff in there to unpack.
Yeah.
If you just fly through the demo, chances are you might feel a little unfulfilled by it, as I did.
Take your time the second way through.
But yeah, take your time second way through.
Play with them.
There's a phone explore. You can use in the upstairs area.
Yeah, that has 3 different messages on it.
So weird. Ooh. Very weird.
Yeah. One really quick thing we should touch on is that, so the other big thing with this is that it is full game, played on your PS4, or you can play it in VR.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did anyone play it in VR at E3?
That it's very difficult to, like, that moving around in that game is nauseating.
We both played The Kitchen,
which
is a game where you're sitting in a chair and woman comes in and screams at you. It's pretty much the same house.
Right.
I mean, they almost said The Kitchen is sort of canonical.
Yeah.
Seems like it,
The demo starts with, like, a file logo, basically.
Yeah.
And literally, if you go back to The Kitchen demo logo, it's identical font and everything to the new RE7 logo.
The big issue that VR is having right now is that movement in it is incredibly difficult for some people to handle. Like, some brains are just not wired to handle it, because your mind is saying, I'm here, I'm looking around, I'm in this room. But the way your mind communicates with your body when you actually use your legs and everything to walk, and that rhythm and that frequency of that, is not translating well to VR, and people are getting incredibly nauseous.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite
inner ear thing.
Yeah.
It's my favorite example is Steve Butler, editor-in-chief, and I don't say this to make fun of him, because I had the same thing. He was playing Job Simulator on Vive in our demo room, and in that game, you're in that job, you're at a desk, and he picked up a coffee mug and he dropped it on the ground, and he physically bent down to pick up the coffee mug and reached his hand out to put his hand on the desk while he bent down, and then just literally fell over, because there isn't actually a desk
there. In his mind,
the
desk was in front of him, and he was in a giant blank demo room.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this is it's going to be really interesting once more VR stuff is out in the wild.
I know. We're basically lab rat.
I feel like the whole node-based thing is the way it's going to go. Like,
yeah.
And in VR, the way you hop between specific set points, it's the same thing in the Psychonauts
that
VR.
That teleporting
demo.
Thing,
yeah.
right?
I think that's the way it's
going to
go.
Fallout VR was doing the same thing. I was talking to Jared Petty about that. I mean, he tried that demo at E3, and it was basically just hopping, just transporting everywhere. We'll see.
So we still have a ton of stuff to talk about. Do you want to save indies and then EA and Ubisoft maybe for next week? Because I have a feeling next week's also going to be relatively light in terms of news.
I think that's all the big
ones. Do you want to just hop to rapid fire?
I will say real quick, as someone who pre-ordered PSVR and wasn't really sure why, that sizzle reel of all the PSVR games, side note, I don't really know when that ended during the show. It just sort of like...
It ended with Call of Duty, which was confusing because we were like, is this still a VR game, or is this just
But that really made me go, oh man, I'm glad I pre-ordered this thing. It's not a garbage. There's no
Stop throwing
things. Hey, man, mine was just an empty can. There's like a bunch of ice in there. You're going to make a mess.
Horrible.
You're going to get rats in here again.
Anyway, we go every week. We go on the Podcast Beyond Facebook group. That's facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. And we ask your questions.
Go to clouds.com.
That clouds.net. And this week, we got a bunch of great ones all about E3. Fabian Lopez asks, do you think the PlayStation games announced will all be delayed?
You can't delay something that doesn't have a release date really far off.
That's kind of what I was saying before. Like, that's why they didn't do release dates.
Horizon and Last Guardian could be the only things that could be delayed, and I don't think they will.
I think Resident Evil might. Yeah, maybe Resident Evil. Yep.
Garyman Garrett asks, any Vita games on the show floor?
Nope.
There were.
Wait, yeah. Yes.
There Callie were. Miranda played Final.
There were Psycho Pass and Yomiwari at the NIS booth, and there was one other one. They're at third parties. I mean, literally none in Sony's booth, none on stage.
I had a running joke with the God of War devs when they came by to do our show that I was going to start giving people $10. For every time I heard a dev say the word Vita, I'd give them $10. They said it once, and then I said it once to them, and I was like, now it just cancels each other.
So that was a funny thing, is that NIS had, Psycho Pass and Yomiwari, and there might have been one more. Yep. We're in a meeting room, not in the show floor. I think possibly, literally, the only one I saw on the show floor was Square, had World of Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. But that is the only big Vita game that I think we know of.
Chris Thorne says, did you talk to anyone at E3 or at a party after that you gained a new respect for?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. Brandon Jones from Easy Allies was I got to catch up with him for the first time for a couple of moments at E3. Just really wonderful, genuine dude. Mm-hmm. Like, go support the stuff that those guys are doing over there.
And also Andrew Renee.
Yeah, Andrew Renee. Yeah, awesome.
All three. You do one of the press conference reaction things for Access?
No, I didn't do that.
He did most of the post-shows.
So I did Sony with her. I think you did Nintendo, and you did Yubi.
Yeah.
Anyway, point being, like, I have so much respect for her. She's awesome. Yeah. She did our IGN Access conversations for the press conferences, and go back and watch those because she just, like, I thought did a really good job of, like, finding the key points from each of them, and she's wonderful.
Yeah. And I met Bernie Burns at our party, and
Bernie's
awesome. Incredible.
Yeah. I had a conversation with the creative director of Watch Dogs 2, and I'm incredibly excited for that game, but they really just get it.
Also, all the devs, like, that was the first time I met Corey. I met a bunch of folks from Rocksteady who listened to the show, and like, everyone I met who listens to our stuff, which boggles my mind that the people we respect who make the things that allow us to have our jobs also listen to this.
It's so cool how cyclical that is.
Sorry about that ham episode.
Yes. But yeah, Alana and I went to play Sea of Thieves. Like, Rare is probably our favorite developer of all time, and everyone from Rare knew who we were, which is just mind-boggling.
It's so cool.
I think legitimately, like, again, to mention your preview, Corey's quotes and everything Corey said about God of War, like, as far as this question, that is someone who I'm like, I didn't understand how well you knew your own games and characters. Mm-hmm. And that, like, he was so insightful, so smart. David Cage also, I think it's easy to kind of poke fun at him, but hearing him be so excited about this world, I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm. He's a lovely man. I've interviewed him once before, and I got to have him on the show floor, and it was like, it was weird, because I think he, like, either he was just being very polite or he knew who I was, which is always kind of a weird thing to be like, you made video games. I like talking a microphone. Like, that's a stupid thing.
You were born in France. He knows everyone born in France.
Yeah. And then,
it was charming to talk to. I also got to talk to Cliff Bleszinski. I don't know. We've had, like, bickered on Twitter before and stuff, but he was like, we just sat down and BS'd about his game, and it was like, it's really cool. He's a guy who really cares about what he does, and I mean, both these guys, I think everybody at E3 kind of cares about what they do because it's fascinating. But
Max and I had a weird 20 minutes where within 20 minutes I interviewed Suda51, he interviewed Cliff Bleszinski, and I'm like, could you imagine, like, us telling each other this like 7 years ago? Killer 7 is one of my favorite games of all time. Like, it's just super surreal. I love doing it.
I used to play Unreal Tournament in the homeroom. Like, it was weird.
We had a weird teacher, dude. That's a real problem there.
I'm gonna get made fun of, but I should also mention Shigenori Sojima was there. He's the character designer of Persona 5, and he created everybody from 3 and 4, and it was cool to meet him.
Even if he put us asleep.
Tommy
Ratliff says, what was your favorite memory from your very first E3? My first day at IGN working with any of these people was at E3, so that was like just getting shot out of a cannon into a wall.
Shout out to Jonathan Dornbush, who had that this year.
Actually, it was we were in the E3 war room, and it was the last day, and everybody was busting their asses, and Steve Butts was there, and Steve Butts was just an editor at the time. And somebody, Matt Casamassima, got up and said, hey, the internet cut out in here. And everyone was like, we can't work. And Steve stood up, and just yelled at the top of his lungs, "Everybody is working for the weekend." And I was like, this guy is awesome. And I started laughing so hard. I'm like, there's this camaraderie here that I've never seen it anywhere I've ever worked. Like, I worked jobs before this. And it's just seeing everybody come together was so special and so cool. So, yeah, that's probably my favorite memory.
Yeah, Warren stuff is the best. Like, there's pictures of it, like, honestly, going live on a post-show or a pre-show or writing news and just everyone sort of watching conferences together and geeking out together is awesome.
I tweeted it at the time, but like last year, the moment they announced Final Fantasy VII Remake, and you felt the Warren freak out. This year, there were like a dozen moments
you
like that.
You can take the temperature on, like, that's a really interesting like focus group, honestly. You can take the temperature on the games industry at that Warren during any press conference. When the entire room's laughing at something, that's not like we're not aping each other. We're doing that because we all feel like that's stupid. When we're cheering and clapping, like I remember last year we were watching the Mario Maker stream, just watching them play through these like expert levels. Like,
you guys were going nuts.
That was,
that was awesome.
I mean, when Star Wars VR got announced, like they're sitting right next to you guys.
There's a video on Alana's Twitter of me and Brian, and I didn't realize we were being filmed, and we were just like losing our minds.
Yeah. Yep.
I was like clapping so hard that my fingers went numb, and I was like, my face is tingling, and I was just like popping up and down.
40 times through the conferences where like some pair of us would like be like, what is going on right now?
In Battlefield 1, they were like, we're proud to announced that you can even use shovels, and I'm like, yeah! It's like, what's wrong with you?
And then they kill a horse, and Brian goes,
no!
I loved the moment you pan around his face, and it was revealed that it was Norman Reedus in the Death Stranding demo. The worm went nuts, which I love.
The Spider-Man trailer,
All
the Zelda footage.
I cried.
I'm not lying. I have tears in my eyes.
My first E3, to answer this question, I got to meet Sean Baby, whose website I read growing up. Like, that was kind of my first exposure aside from, I guess, on websites, really. I mean, I go to IGN for walkthroughs and stuff, but for like
the godfather of video game comedy, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So it was super weird. And I just,
what about Nestor?
But yeah, like I met him at a party, and I was like totally just freaked out and like just completely fanboyed, and was like, oh my god, this is the coolest thing ever. And he was like super nice, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then I don't know, here I am, like this is my sixth E3, you know. It's just weird how it creeps up on you that
this is my fifth.
This was my eighth.
This was my ninth.
I met Cliff Bleszinski at my first E3. I was with Will Tuttle, who works at Xbox now, and Tal Blevins, who used to work at IGN. And we were just walking down the street, and all of a sudden, Cliff's there. And they started talking to him because they'd known him for years. And I'm just standing there, and like, hi, I'm Brian. They're like, this is Brian. He's our new hire. It's his first E3. And I'm like, hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you. And we walked away, and I was like, oh my god, that was so cool. And they're like, oh, we didn't realize this is all new for you. We're all so numb to this. And like, there's something so special about that. I hope that I don't think that'll ever go away.
Yeah,
really.
And I love being able to. It seems like every year we have one or two new people, being able to like be that to them now.
Oh, it's great.
Like, talking to Chastity after was awesome, because this is her first E3, and she was just like totally like neck deep in it.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah. Also, hey, even if you don't use Snapchat, get Snapchat and check out IGN stuff on there, because Chastity like and her team, they bust their ass and they do some incredible
stuff.
Also,
it's basically one of the things that's just really good on IGN. It just works and is different. And
basically a little
cutting edge.
It's like a little page a day calendar, but with videos. It feels very much like
and a bunch of us would always do pop
you
up
do
in there.
Very weird, funny videos on that. Yeah, so go check that out.
Yeah, we have every time one of us pitches a feature that's too weird to actually go up on the site, we're like, let's do it for Snapchat, because in 24 hours we can't get in trouble.
I wanted to do one last one at the end about IGN's Game of the Show, which was Zelda. Goji Gonzalez says, do you feel like the new Zelda looks a lot like Shadow of the Colossus reskinned with a Nintendo look? A lot of people are just sort of generally asking our thoughts on Zelda, which, I mean, obviously if you grew up playing video games, that's a franchise you've interacted with in some way. It's my favorite video game franchise of all time. How do you guys feel about Zelda? I know it's not a PS4 game, sorry.
It looks like Metal Gear Solid 5 did, in terms of being like, here's this genre-defining classic series that's been around for, you know, 30 years or whatever. And they're finally like taking cues from other games.
Yeah.
Because I think that it's one of those things where it's to be like, you know, to be derivative after being a trendsetter is kind of frowned upon, you know? And it's like, it's always kind of like, oh, we're going to do our own thing. But like, maybe poke your head up now and then and look at what other people are doing. So this looks like, I mean, this looks a little bit like Shadow of the Colossus. I was thinking more kind of like more Dark Souls, more Skyrim.
Mm-hmm. Uncharted.
Uncharted. Yeah. I mean, it's got like all these. It looks
Minecraft.
Looks like a massive, massive departure for the series, and it's
Which for the first time since 98?
Yeah, it feels like they're making a game outside of the vacuum.
The game it's closest to is the NES Zelda. Like, yeah, honestly, 100%. What it really feels like is a super modern reboot of that. Because that's the only Zelda where you can just go in any direction.
And a lot of the games Max mentioned are pulled from some of the things that the original Zelda had.
Well, like, that's the cool thing. It's that when Tomb Raider Reboot came out in 2013, and everyone was like, oh, it's ripping off Uncharted. And it's like, well, but Uncharted is ripping off Tomb Raider.
Dude, I did an interview with the devs behind Lego Worlds at E3, and people were in the comments and they were like, this is a Minecraft ripoff. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Minecraft ripped off Legos. Like, that's where it started. Like, let's trace this back. But I was talking to Ryan Scott yesterday, who used to work here. He's a friend of the show on Comedy Button, and about how the original Legend of Zelda is basically a game that you can walk into the third dungeon, straight up in the beginning of the game. Like, if you can go to the second screen and buy the candle that lets you burn a bush, and then walk into the seventh dungeon and just start fighting dudes.
Yeah. Well, that's what? I mean, in this new Zelda, like, when Jose and I saw it, they literally just turned a corner and we met this giant rock monster who just destroyed us in one blow, and they were like, not ready for that one yet. And that was like 1 minute into the game.
So one of my favorite things in Bloodborne is like running around that first area that looks a lot like Resident Evil 4, and there's down that one side street, you're like, who the hell's that dude?
Oh,
big ass dude, and you go down there and he destroys you, and then like you come back 5 hours later and you're like, yo, what's up now?
I'm ready.
I love that.
No, that's so cool.
It's doing, I think, for we've never really seen an open world Metroidvania, like, in that sense, where it's just like, okay, there's an environment puzzle here, but you can't get through it yet because you don't have a hookshot.
I mean,
but who knows where that hookshot is?
Like, the Tomb Raider reboot kind of did that.
Kind of, yeah.
But it was still those weird sort of structure, and that never felt like an open world.
Open world.
That was really good. We didn't give you your props in the last episode, but
that was good.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks really for listening. Yeah, that was good.
You guys also have a Drunk Beyond that's going up soon?
Yeah, that's going to be weird. I don't know what we said. I think I said that Norman Reedus looks like a racist, so apologies to Norman Reedus.
Yeah, we recorded just on audio, a bunch of people got sick after E3, so that's why it's delayed. So this will probably be up after. Also, I apologize because this will probably be up first, and then that will be up, which took place in the past. But it was different people's opinions, like Alana and Zach and Greg Miller and Miranda and Kelly.
A lot of people on there.
Just more Beyond.
Just with alcohol.
Yeah. Also, in the Beyond group, I put up a thread of every interview I did at E3. I'm really proud of those. We did a lot of really cool stuff. So if you haven't gone back and looked at the IGN YouTube channel, chances are you're going to get a bunch of new and interesting and different takes on games. Stuff like God of War, we saw behind closed doors, the same demo being replayed, and there's just like... Because there's a guy playing it, different things happen.
And giving us context.
We should all do that. Go into the thread and just drop in five things each of us did or something.
Totally.
Because I saw your thing. Because, I have stuff on your chair.
You know where you can check that out? It's facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond.
That's right.
And then all these videos will be up on YouTube at youtube.com/IGNBeyond, which we are active in the comments
there. Hey, Marty.
Yeah.
Please, call out an app.
Oh,
such as
Roku, iOS,
PS4, Xbox, and et cetera.
Yeah.
During this recording.
Yeah, during this recording. No, the apps are actually good. I have the PS4 app. That's where I'll go home and I'll fall asleep. I'll bring a girl home and I'll make her fall asleep to an episode of Beyond.
That's the worst.
I've never done that before. That's very weird.
Yeah.
You remember, your word of the week is cummus.
Stop it.
The most horrible thing Marty's ever said on the show.
Oh, yeah, right.
In the same week, I said tunt. And pangus.
All right. Well,
thanks
great.
For listening.
Where can we find everyone on the Twitter?
This was really fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. I'm Max Scoville on Twitter. Goldfarb is Garfep.
Yep.
Brian is Agent Bizzle. Mm-hmm. Marty is McBiggity with two G's and two T's.
That's right. And three cummuses.
Yeah, if you have trouble finding those, then I don't know what to tell you, man. The internet.
And Alana's in Australia for a few weeks, right? So
we'll
get her back on the show.
But show a bunch
returns.
Of dog pictures, so it's worth it.
Yeah. Send a nice picture of a dog to Alana.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do not send anyone ever pictures of spiders, because that's just suck. I hate spiders.
Wow. All right, that's it. The show's over. Let's go home.
Beyond!
Yeah. Beyond!
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.